Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Time to rise and grind right here on the early line, Sirius XM channel 159 on the Sports Grid Network. And my goodness, what a night it was across the sports landscape. What a night it's going to be tonight. So many hot topics to get to, which does include the NFL draft. Round number one is going to start tomorrow night, and Sports Grid is the place where you want to be. I'm Donnie Wrightside. He is Davis Maddock, and we are ready for the next 3 hours to bring you every single thing you need to know about what happened last night and how to play it forward to tonight. Davis, how are we feeling on this glorious Wednesday morning?
Man, I am jazzed up. We are about 34 hours away from the beginning of the 2024 NFL draft. Look, I know we got baseball. I know we've got the Zurich Classic, NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs. But look, I'm a football nerd at heart. The thing I'm most excited for is when the real draft begins tomorrow after the Chicago Bears pick at number one.
And some people say that playoff series don't begin until a home team or a road team actually wins one of those road games. Here we go, the Dallas Mavericks, 96-93 over the LA Clippers. Now, this one was interesting because we both think that the Dallas Mavericks are going to win this series. We just didn't know when Kawhi Leonard was going to come back. Kawhi Leonard missed game number one. And yesterday afternoon, Davis, we got that information that, you know what? Kawhi is at shoot-around with a chance to play. It was confirmed later in the evening that Kawhi Leonard was going to play, which meant the Clippers then shifted to a favorite here. Didn't matter. Dallas Mavericks, better team last night, evening up the series 1-1, heading back to Dallas.
They did. So the Mavericks were my best bet on the show yesterday. We win by the hair of our chin. We get the hook here, winning by 3. The spread was 2.5 when I bet it. But I probably would not have made it my best bet if I would have known that Kawhi, like if you had told me Kawhi Leonard's going to play 35 minutes, I probably would not have made that wager. The Clippers just like absolutely could not buy a bucket from three, which I suppose is, you know, kind of something that we would expect from them in some of these playoff spots.
Yeah, you're right about that. And that's always the peril of handicapping an NBA game 12 hours ahead of when it's supposed to start with some key injury information. We didn't know when Kawhi Leonard was coming back, so it was interesting to me. Middle of the afternoon, he's at the shoot-around with a chance to play. That's big there because the Mavericks could not afford to go down 0-2 with Kawhi Leonard back and playing healthy before they got back to Dallas here. Game number two, we'll take a look at last night. The Minnesota Timberwolves, which was my best bet, 105-93 victory over the Phoenix Suns. Phoenix actually started out very well in the first half. It was the Timberwolves defense in the second half that really held Phoenix at bay. 20 points in the third quarter, 22 points in the fourth quarter. Another double-digit victory by the Timberwolves. I'll say this again. The T-Wolves are better than the Suns, and they're showing it right now.
The T-Wolves are better than the Suns. I mean, what I said on the show yesterday was that Kevin Durant has got to outplay Karl Anthony Towns, and he's got to outplay him by a good bit. 18 points on 15 shots. Not going to get it done. 20 points on 13 shots for Booker. Yusuf Nurkic takes 11 shots. You've got Drew Eubanks playing 17 minutes. I mean, this Suns experiment, it's not going to work, man. I liked the idea, these guys all playing together. They just really, I guess the issue is the Suns did not get lucky with any of their, you know, veteran minimum guys. Basically, every veteran minimum guy they have has pretty much stunk.
And by the way, you take a look at this game too. Grayson Allen, maybe more of a game time decision with that rolled ankle. They said he was fine, only played 17 minutes, 1 of 2 from the floor, 3 total points in that game. But I think you can measure up starting lineup versus starting lineup. Look at the plus minuses there. Kevin Durant, -24. Nurkic, -21. Beal, -11. Booker, -24. That's not going to get the job done. And now you take a look at being down 0-2 before you head back to the Valley. Tough scene here to dig out from for those Phoenix Suns. How about this? Indiana Pacers, who I thought were dead to rights after game number 1, looked horrendous. Much, much better performance. You take a look at Halliburton's 12 assists last night to pace it here. I really liked what I saw from the Pacers because, again, if you just looked at that box score, Davis, and you told me right now, uh-oh, take a look at this. Damon Lillard, 6 of 13 from three-point range, 34 points, and then also throw in, by the way, Brook Lopez, 6 of 7 from three-point range, should have been a victory for the Bucks, and it wasn't. Loved what I saw out of the Pacers after hating what I saw in game number 1.
And you know what's crazy is they did it without even a particularly good Halliburton game, 12 points on 10 shots. He did add 12 assists, which is, you know, after that hamstring injury, he became much more of a facilitator offense as opposed to the primary creator. But Siakam, back-to-back huge games for him here. Really, the biggest difference was the collective of the Indiana Pacers. They were not just, like, so frightened they couldn't see straight. You know, Nesmith played a good game. Turner played a good game. Nembhard played a good game. Obi Toppin, 11 shots off the bench in 21 minutes. And then on the converse, you basically just had Damian Lillard coming back to earth, right? So he had 34 points. But it was stretched out over the over all four quarters this time, and not just all lumped up into one. And Bobby Portis, you know, more shots than points for Bobby Portis. You don't particularly love to see that.
Now we look over to the sideline and find out when Giannis Antetokounmpo is going to return into this series. Now a little bit more pressure. If you were the Milwaukee Bucks, you go up 2-0. You can rest him maybe for a game longer than needed. Maybe you can't do that now as home court advantage now is being held by the Indiana Pacers. NHL last night, 4 games on the card. The Rangers 4-3 over the Capitals. You take a look at an overtime game. The Panthers 3-2 over the Lightning. By the way, both of those two series here, 2-0 now in favor of the home team. We flip it over then to some teams that got some victories on the road. The Avalanche, a 5-2 win over the Jets. And then we look at the Predators, a 4-1 win over the Canucks. The NHL heating up in a quadruple header last night, Davis.
Yeah, I tuned in to a little bit of the Avalanche traveling to play at the Jets. A 4-goal second period pretty much put this one away. If you let the Avalanche get up on you by 3 goals, it's just not going to end well for you. It's not really the way that it works. The Canucks series, I suppose, fairly interesting. That one is tied 1-1. Just feels like that's kind of the way hockey playoff series go. It's so set up for 7-game series, which I suppose is what the league likes, because you're definitely going to get casual fans coming in there to watch a Game 7 NHL playoffs.
Game 7, little overtime action. Hockey certainly hitting the gas pedal right now. In Major League Baseball, you can't win every baseball game. 7-game win streak snapped. The Cincinnati Reds, 8 runs. The Philadelphia Phillies, 1 run. Now, it wasn't really Christopher Sanchez's fault. As you see that byline, 3 innings pitched, 1 earned run. He actually gave up 5 runs overall, but only one of those earned. Why? Because the Phillies couldn't field the baseball. 3 errors early dooms them in. They were down 5-1 after the 3rd inning, and away, that game went from them. 8-1 for the Reds. Good win for the Reds. Bad loss by the Phillies. Bounce back. See what happens today.
I mean, do you remember, I'm sure you do, that when the Philadelphia Phillies acquired Bryce Harper, this was actually like a legitimate concern. People were like, this defense is terrible. You're playing Castellanos in the outfield. At the time when they signed Kyle Schwarber, the DH stuff hadn't come in yet, so he was having to play in the field a little bit. Not that it, you know, I don't think it particularly matters, but it is sort of interesting to see that old narrative rear its head. Also weird for this team to be playing 2 total zeros in Pache and Rojas in the outfield. I mean, you would not imagine that is going to be their playoff lineup, but just interesting to see.
Yeah, and also talking about that DH too, remind ourselves that last year Bryce Harper was the DH the entire season because he couldn't play the field, which forced Kyle Schwarber to play in the field if you wanted his bat in the lineup here. So certainly things going around, but also flip it over to another Philadelphia story. Tyrese Maxey was fouled, I don't know, 16 times in the final minute, and it wasn't called. The Sixers are upset, but it doesn't change the conditions here. They are down 0-2 heading back to Philadelphia.
Yep, Tyrese Maxey wins the most improved player, and the Philadelphia 76ers, they win the mythological last 2-minute report championship. Like, if you just look at the last 2-minute report, the series is 1-1. That's all we need, Donnie.
By the way, how does that make a team feel, though? It's like, look, we know we got robbed. The NBA tells you we got robbed, but we can't return it. Like, you get no insurance. Like, in real life, hey, man, somebody broke into my car and stole my phone. You turn it over to insurance, you get that money back. In the NBA and professional sports, you don't get it back. Ha ha, our bad, man. You should have won that game. Millions of dollars are at stake for extra home games, advancing in the playoffs, or embarrassment, or maybe coaches get fired if you lose, but no big deal. Take this letter of our apology from the NBA. We missed it. You should have won, but you didn't. and tough luck. We'll see you in game number three, which adds intrigue here over to what we're actually going to see in game number three. Are the refs clued in there that the Sixers got robbed and maybe a couple phantom foul calls go their way? We'll certainly find that out, but we got to get to what happened on the court yesterday, which includes Kawhi Leonard. The Claw is back. Didn't matter last night. Dallas picked up a big victory. We'll handicap that game next and move forward. We'll be right back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hour number one here in full effect on the early line. Sirius XM Channel 159, Sports Grid Network. Davis Maddock, Donnie right side here going over what happened last night in the NBA and out west in LA, Crypto.com Arena. No, it wasn't the Lakers. It was the Clippers yesterday. After a game one victory where Dallas didn't play all that well, James Harden really showed up. We were waiting to see when Kawhi Leonard would come back. Was there any word that we were definitive that he was coming back in game number two? But yesterday in the afternoon, we got the updates. Kawhi Leonard showed up to shoot around, which is usually a positive sign. Kawhi Leonard did play in that basketball game and played 35 minutes. Was he perfect? No. 7 of 17, goes 15 points there, 0 of 5 from three-point range. But the Dallas Mavericks got a much-needed win yesterday to tie up the series before they head back to Dallas, Davis.
They did 46 minutes for Luka Doncic in this one. You can see they were not playing around. They knew we can't go in the 0-2 hole here. Luka Doncic was plus 8 in those minutes. Interesting that Kyrie Irving played 42 minutes and was exactly 0 plus minus, you know, just like kind of holding serve for those minutes. And then the extra 4 Luka Doncic minutes, that's how you end up winning the game. They also got a really good impact from Derek Lively off the bench. And Kleba, who I maligned on Monday after game one, was very solid in this one. You know, not, I mean, Maxi Kleba is never going to be the guy that swings this series, but Jason Kidd did opt to go for Derek Lively in Kleba with PJ Washington, as opposed to playing Daniel Gafford. Gafford only played 9 minutes in this one. He's also struggling with an ankle injury that he suffered in game one, so he just might not be quite 100%. Derek Jones Jr. also didn't get the quick hook in this one. He played only 17 minutes in game one. They went with more Tim Hardaway Jr., only 6 minutes for Tim Hardaway Jr., which, by the way, I mean, I think that we have given Jason Kidd quite a hard time. You know, I don't think that he's like the greatest NBA coach, but I like the decision making that he did in this series. He did not run back the same thing from game one. And I also think that I was correct with the defensive coverages that the Clippers were using on Luka Doncic. He got off 14 three-pointers as a result of that drop coverage. Now, he only made 5 of them, but if you're just going to give Luka that much space, you're just not, I don't think it's viable. I think the way that the Clippers can win this series is Kawhi has got to, for at least like 30 minutes a night, take the primary defensive assignment on Luka, and he's just got to stick to him like white on rice.
And by the way, you look at the Clippers last night and you take a look at their efficiency. It was really bad from the floor. 32 of 87 as a team, 37%. 3-point range, they were a disaster. 8 of 30 for 26%. Got to the free throw line and converted around 81%, which is solid. But that, you know, Dallas isn't really known for being a tough, tough defensive team. That's just a bad effort overall. So let me ask you this question. Kawhi Leonard, which it wasn't as if, Davis, he missed like the final game of the season and then game number one of the playoffs. Oh, we had him just a few weeks ago. He missed a lot of time down the stretch, but playing for 35 minutes, I suppose, is a very good sign moving forward. It just looked like they were a little bit disjointed with him back into the lineup, but also moving forward in the series with Kawhi Leonard, who last night, 15.7 of 17 from the floor. What can we anticipate from Kawhi? Should we have smooth sailing from here on out, like we're not worried about the knee? Or is this something probably we're looking at a day-to-day basis, game-to-game basis? Which Kawhi Leonard are we actually going to get here?
I mean, probably even more than day-to-day, game-to-game. It's probably quarter-to-quarter. We've literally seen this where Kawhi has started games, not come back for the second half. And, you know, it is, in a way, it is kind of like a tragic thing in the modern NBA that we really have not gotten the full Kawhi Leonard experience since his second-to-last season with the San Antonio Spurs, where he was fully healthy, he was fully available, MVP candidate, finals MVP, all that stuff, for Kawhi Leonard. His Raptors career, I mean, he never played on back-to-backs. He was very good in the postseason. And then since he's been a member of the Clippers, all anything remembers from Kawhi Leonard's time with the Clippers is the injuries. You know, he has had some really good moments in a Clippers jersey, but it has not been anything like what we imagined when Paul George and Kawhi did team up. And that is probably enough for me to say the Mavericks are just going to end up winning the series, because if we just show up for a crit, like let's say it's 2-2 game five and Kawhi's like, oh man, I can't go. The knee is no good. I think the Mavericks probably are the right side here. Like minus 140 does not seem like a crazy price, because if Woj tweeted out in 2 hours, Kawhi Leonard suffered a meniscus irritation, whatever, he's going to be out for the remainder of the series, that price would go to minus 300, minus 400, something like that, because not only are you losing Kawhi, but it means, all right, we got to have, you know, 30 minutes a night from Amir Coffee. Russell Westbrook's got to take on a much larger role in shot creation. James Harden has to take on a much larger role in scoring the basketball. You are obviously intimately familiar with what happens to James Harden in the playoffs. The guy just forgets how to make three-pointers. I don't know why. It just is what it is. So I'm pretty firmly on the side of Dallas here.
You're right about that with James Harden. We saw it last year in the Boston Celtics series with the Philadelphia 76ers. Like, James Harden could come out of nowhere and have unbelievable performances like he did in game number one, and then go back to mediocrity, and you start to question what he's actually doing out there. But there were no excuses last night for the Clippers, who had a legitimate chance to go up 2-0 in a series to take full control. If we are lining the series back up, as Davis pointed out, Dallas now the favorite again at a minus 140 price. That dog price on the Clippers, a plus 114. If you want the spread, Dallas -1.5 games, that's a plus 136 price. If you want the game and a half with the Clippers, that's a minus 168. And if we're looking at the favorites to see how long this series is going to go, now six games coming in at a plus 130 price. We always anticipated a pretty good series here. The question marks around it were, when was Kawhi Leonard going to come back to the equation and how effective he will be? Wasn't all that effective yesterday, but also keep in mind, played 35 minutes. This wasn't like, okay, I'm going to come off the bench, I'm going to play 16 minutes to see how I feel. Now the questions will come up as we pointed out, what's going to happen today? How did that knee actually respond? Is he going to be on the plane when they take on the Dallas Mavericks? We'll certainly find that out. But impressive nonetheless. I like that performance out of Dallas, because it looks like the momentum from game number one was all Clippers. Then you get back your superstar player, you're supposed to win that game. And also throughout the day, Davis, you won your best bet. And the same thing with me a day before. I had 203.5 on an under, which ended up at 205.5 at 206 at the gun, and still was able to hit that easily. Now, yesterday, easy in the eye of the beholder there. Very good performance by the Mavericks, but you had them at -2. They flipped to a dog, and it didn't actually matter at this point. Moving forward, are we going to just see the Mavericks take control of the series, or are we in for one of those seven-game series here, Davis?
To me, it feels like a seven-game series. Just feels like we are kind of destined for a classic here. Haymakers from both sides. We have a great Luka game. We have a great Paul George game. Just kind of, I think that is the vibe that I am getting from this series.
The vibe on the Minnesota Timberwolves, it's a sweep, baby. It's going to be a sweep over the Suns. What happened last night? Let's go over and see what happened there. Come on back with us, the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
T-Wolves take that commanding 2-0 series lead over the Phoenix Suns. And again, just setting the table for the series before it began, I said to myself, it's a short little dog price, plus 114 for the Minnesota Timberwolves to win this round against the Phoenix Suns. I thought it would be a very entertaining matchup, and it still could be. We still could get to six or seven games. Once you get on your home court, you tend to play a little bit better. Everybody knows this. But the T-Wolves last night, 105-93 victory over the Suns. And again, the Suns not being able to reach 100 points in a game is a direct derivative of the Minnesota Timberwolves playing very good defense. But at the same time, you still have to show up and be a little bit more productive. Davis, you take a look at the Phoenix Suns starting lineup last night, particularly the big three. Kevin Durant, 6 of 15, not good enough. Bradley Beal, 6 of 17, not good enough. Devin Booker, 6 of 13, not good enough. 20 points, 14 points, and 18 points for the big three. That's why he lost that game by double digits last night.
Well, they lost this game by double digits because the functioning thesis for the Phoenix Suns is that Kevin Durant's got to be the best player in any given series, and Devin Booker has to score 29 points on, you know, 17 shots, more or less. Bradley Beal was, I mean, honestly, he was just bad in this game. 14 points on 17 shots, did not get to the free throw line. Grayson Allen's only able to play 17 minutes, so Eric Gordon has to play. Gordon actually was the only one who kind of even came close to doing his job. He was only minus 7 compared to all the starters who were minus 11 or worse. They also played double center lineups. I don't think they did this at all in the regular season, but they played Drew Eubanks and Jusuf Nurkić together for a little bit, and then they I don't know, man. It's just, it's not great. It's not great for the Phoenix Suns. They are one of the most expensive teams in the NBA. They've got no picks, right? Not only do they not have their first round picks, remember, they traded 5 second rounders for Bradley Beal. You got 36-year-old Kevin Durant. Got 32-year-old Bradley Beal. I mean, it's really, you lose this one, and I think you're right what you said in the intro. I mean, I think this is a sweep. I do not think the Phoenix Suns have it in them to dig deep and come back in this one. Like the Sixers, I think they can come back down from 0-2. I think they can win the next four games. I think they could win a game 7 on the road. I mean, imagine this Suns team that has like no spine, no defensive solidity, trying to win a game 5 on the road. I mean, it's just not happening. Like, there's just no way.
You take a look at like the scoring patterns here, right? You take a look at the Phoenix Suns as a team, shot 45% from the floor, which is identical to what the Minnesota Timberwolves did. You take a look at the 3-point line, they actually shot 36%, talking about the Phoenix Suns, 28% for the Timberwolves. Usually you'd say to yourself, well, you win the 3-point line, you're probably going to win that game. You lost the free throw line in this game, but also 19 turnovers for the Phoenix Suns in this game. That's going to do you in every single time when you're not even getting shots up at the basket here. Now, moving forward in the series, as we hit the reset button, Minnesota is a heavy favorite now at a minus 480 price to win this series. If you want that dog price on Phoenix, it's a plus 350. The spread, you're not even getting 1.5 now. It's minus 2.5 games for the T-Wolves at a minus 102 price. If you like Phoenix here to extend this series, it's a plus 2.5 at a minus 120. And if we're looking at the favorite in the clubhouse for this series to be done, that's game 5 at a plus 220 price. So it just seems so simple. I'm rooting for the Timberwolves. I have a bet on the Timberwolves winning the series. If I remove that from the equation, Davis, and ask you this, how do the Phoenix Suns get back into this series where maybe they can head back to Minnesota at 2-2?
It's not happening. I think the only way it happens is just like a completely nuclear Devin Booker game. I don't even think a completely nuclear Kevin Durant game gets them there, like 42 points on 21 shots or something. I think you're actually needing like 55, just maybe not 55, but just one of those Devin Booker games where he barely has to look at the basket before the ball is going in. The crazy thing is the Timberwolves had this amazing regular season defense, the best defense in the NBA, better than the Celtics, better than the Magic. And it's like for the series, everyone just thought, oh, well, like it's the Suns. They have Kevin Durant, they have Bradley Beal, they have Devin Booker. They're going to be able to score. And the Wolves basically play 7 very good defenders in their rotation. The only one in their rotation you would say is like not a great defensive player is Mike Conley. And it's not that Conley's bad, it's just that he's old, so he can't move it laterally as well anymore. But Anthony Edwards, great defensive player. Rudy Gobert, defensive player. Well, Karl Anthony Towns is not a great defensive player, but he is huge, right? He's just a giant guy. So he can kind of get in Durant's vision. He can get in Durant's line of sight. And on the smaller guys, I mean, you know, Royce O'Neal not getting baskets against Karl Anthony Towns. I think this is a sweep. I think this is 4 games. I think the Timberwolves are going to get their rest in, be ready for whatever is next. This one is a sweep.
Yeah, and also you're taking a look at a team, as Davis pointed out, the Phoenix Suns are really expensive. There's way too much talent here. I don't care who you're playing to get knocked out in round number 1. Could there be changes on the horizon? But also, no draft picks, no money to spend. Tough scene out there for Phoenix. Let's flip it over to the Eastern Conference playoffs next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
NBA was cooking yesterday with a triple header. Did you watch? Did you enjoy? Did you make some money? Did you have fun? And oh, yes. How about this finish yesterday? Indiana Pacers, 125, Bucks, 108. It's Davis and Donnie in the morning. Sirius XM Channel 159, Sports Grid Network. What happened last night to the Bucks? Where was all that joy from game number one? Dame Lillard showed up in this basketball game, but the one thing we weren't sure of is, can Pascal Siakam continue to be a dominant force at the power forward position for the Pacers? He was again yesterday, Davis. 37 minutes played, 16 of 23 from the floor, 11 rebounds, 6 assists. 37 points total. He was the star of the game, and the Pacers won easily by double digits.
Yeah, I mean, I think a fair amount of people sort of looked askance at the Indiana Pacers when they traded three first-round picks and three, you know, lottery-protected to some degree first-round picks for Pascal Siakam. Like, oh, this is a young team. They really only have one star. Is Pascal Siakam really a second star? He's a little bit, well, actually not a little bit older. He's almost 30. I mean, I think that the Bucks got that really awesome game one win because of emotion, because the Pacers were scared. I mean, it was the first playoff game for a lot of these guys, first playoff game for Nembhard, first playoff game for all the guys on the bench other than TJ McConnell, first playoff game for Tyrese Halliburton. Siakam was really the only one with any experience. And it sounds so trite, right? This is such a TV talking head thing to lean on the experience. But playoff basketball is markedly different from regular season basketball. One, the pace does slow down. I mean, that is just proven. It's not a ton, right? But the average number of possessions in a game does go down in the postseason versus the regular season. Foul rates go down historically as well. Now, we know that in the regular season, the NBA did this switch to have foul rates go down anyway, but they've been down even more in the playoffs. We saw great evidence of that in your Knicks 76ers game, where basically the refs are just like, we are swallowing the whistle. You really have to be fouled in the act of shooting to get the call. You can't, Trae Young can't just go get in the lane and get, you know, breathed on and get a foul call. I think that was a big part of Indiana's regular season offense, but you know, no one on the Pacers other than Bobby Portis played particularly bad, I don't think. I mean, 34-5-4 from Damian Lillard is like a pretty fine game. He went 6 of 13 from three-point range. I suppose if you wanted a limiting factor, it would be that the Bucks only did take 32 three-pointers. I think most of the time they'd like to be close to like 40, 42 three-pointers. Not a ton of turnovers from Indiana, only 5 turnovers. That is probably the secret ingredient here. They just were able to get into their sets. And look, I said this on the show yesterday. This is a team that is going to go as far as Giannis can take them. So we're moving. I mean, Giannis is like every key ingredient here. He's the baking soda. He's the flour. Mm-hmm. He's the yeast. He just makes it all work for the Milwaukee Bucks. And I mean, Chris Middleton had to leave this game with an injury for a little bit and come back. He was minus 10. Like, the Bucks are just not winning playoff basketball games without Giannis. It's just not going to happen.
Pacers pacing themselves yesterday. How about this, Davis? 30 in the first quarter, 30 in the second quarter, 32 in the third quarter, 33 in the fourth quarter. They won every single quarter against the Milwaukee Bucks, a wire-to-wire victory for them. And also, they didn't get to the free throw line that much, only 9 of 14, but it didn't matter. They shot 56% as a team, going 50 of 90 from the floor, which included 44% from three-point range, 16 of 36. If you're looking again, Siakam was tremendous, but look at the starting lineup. 37 points, 11 points, 22, 20, and 12. They did really good, some good damage here. And Toppin had 21 minutes off the bench, adding 9 points there. Now, the questions here are going to start to pop up with the Milwaukee Bucks. They got the 1-1 series split, which is like, well, Donnie, what are you talking about? They're the home team. You hope to go 2-0. Not necessarily for me, because we thought probably the Pacers overall were the better team. Better team in the regular season, going up against Giannis and the Bucks. And also, that game number one, sort of like, man, I don't know what the Pacers were doing. Just not ready for prime time. But they really got back into gear and now have settled in as the favorite in the series. If we're looking here, it's a slight one. Minus 115 price if you like the Pacers to win the series. If you're going with the Bucks, that's a minus 105. I read that backwards here. I thought the Indiana was the favorite here, but no. Milwaukee is the minus 115 price, which let me just stick on that for a second. Is that just we're expecting Giannis Antetokounmpo to come back and be the dominating factor in the series? Because the Pacers, to me, slight favorite coming in, say what you will, moving forward to game number three at home, 1-1. I like that scenario. But is it just Giannis here, Davis?
I mean, I think Giannis is definitely a big part of it. Like, there could be a little bit of inside information going on. You know, there's always going to be a little bit that there are some bettors who are not going to be sharing that information on a free ad-supported television network like Sports Grid. I mean, look, I'm giving you guys everything that I've got, but there are people out there who are not so willing to share that information. And, I mean, the other part of it is the Pacers did show us in game one they've got a total choke job in them. I mean, who's to say that that doesn't come back? I mean, it definitely could. Like, just because they demonstrated evidence of being able to play one good playoff game does not necessarily imply that they're going to be able to do so over the course of an entire series. Would I bet the Bucks in the series? No chance. I mean, I do wonder what the odds would be. You know, let's say Shams tweets out, you and I get off the show, we're sitting there scrolling Twitter, and Shams tweets, Giannis is going to undergo on-court activities, and the organization thinks that he should be good to go. He's been rehabbing relentlessly. I mean, we've actually seen Giannis come back quicker than expected from injuries multiple times. He just has this incredible healing ability, and it wouldn't be that surprising. And if Giannis does come back, there is not one person on this Pacers roster who can get in between that guy and the basket. I mean, no one, I guess, can really get in between Giannis and the basket, but the Pacers are a small team. They play Turner and Siakam, both of whom are smaller and slower than Giannis. I think we could see like a crazy, you know, final three games from Giannis if he is able to come back.
Yeah, scoring might be higher as well. You take a look at yesterday, 125-108 victory for the Pacers. That game did go over the total. De facto pick 'em, depending on, you know, some parts of the day, Pacers were favored. Some parts of the day, the Bucks were the favorite here. If we are looking at when we think this series will end, the favorite, the clubhouse, is six games at a +130 price. Why is that a big deal? You know, as game six at home, that's the Indiana Pacers. So I'm sure they like the fact that they got the split. It'll be interesting when Giannis Antetokounmpo comes back and how effective that he is going to be. But if we are looking at this series and saying, well, if Giannis comes back sooner than later, sure, that's going to help the Bucks. And also, if the Bucks were up 2-0 in this series, maybe they can afford to hold Giannis out an extra game or two if need be. I wouldn't be surprised if we see Giannis Antetokounmpo in game number three here. But let's flip it over to the Eastern Conference odds. The Boston Celtics sitting back on, all right, we've only played one game here, decimated the Heat, a -250 favorite here in the Eastern Conference to win. The Knicks +6 or 6-1 price. The Bucks +750. Cavs 16-1. Sixers 19-1. How about the Pacers? 36-1. Is there any, like, remove the Celtics as we always like to do. The plus money figures out here, Davis. Who still gives you value, or who's somebody that you might want to take at some of those big prices?
Your Philadelphia 76ers, no question about it. The 76ers, again, I said it yesterday, they've totally got what it takes to come back in the series. I mean, obviously, I don't think they can come back from going down 0-3. That would pretty much be a death knell. But if they win the next one, you know, then you've got, okay, Joel Embiid. Joel Embiid will have 3 days rest by the next time they play. I think this being a round one series and not a round two or round three series where it's every other day, big advantage. Because Embiid seems healthy, but remember, this was a knee injury. This was not a hand injury. This was not a head injury. The dude's conditioning is not at its peak, right? It's not at 100%. So 3 days rest, I think, is going to be strong for him there. And if the 76ers win this series, I bet they actually leapfrog every other team and they end up second in the odds. And the Celtics would be favored over the 76ers in a series, but they wouldn't be favored by -250, I don't think. Like, if you get a Celtics 76ers series, I bet it's closer to like -180 for the Boston Celtics there. So I think your 76ers are not a terrible bet here.
76ers got to win game number three. That game's not tonight. It's going to take place tomorrow, Thursday night, here in the city of brotherly love. But interesting doings here in the Eastern Conference. And also, more than ever, looking at the landscape of the NBA playoffs and figuring out whose superstar is coming back from injury faster than the other ones could be the difference here. Will Giannis come back? Does he get injured? Does he play well? Does he springboard them into possibly an Eastern Conference final view? We'll find out. Major League Baseball, what happened last night on the diamond? We'll go over that next, right here on the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
What happened on the diamond yesterday? Well, you're going to find out. And if you were a Cincinnati Reds backer yesterday, you were overjoyed with an 8-1 victory over the Philadelphia Phillies. Now, the Philadelphia Phillies, Davis, coming into that game, had the longest win streak in Major League Baseball. It was 7 games, and it snapped here in an easy win by the Reds. And quite frankly, I did an RBI prop in this game. It was Alec Bohm. He gets the RBI in the first inning. Look at this. The Phillies are going to be on their way to win number 8. Well, 8 unearned runs by the Cincinnati Reds told a different story here. Easy win for the Reds. Phillies just don't play all that well in the field, committing 3 errors early in that game, and that was all she wrote. This game was over quick, 8-1 final. Reds pick up the dub.
Look, you're not going to win very many games when you let Santiago Espinal hit home runs off of you. I was just deriding Mr. Espinal on the show yesterday. Like, oh, you know, the Reds have all these great young hitters. And somehow they still have him playing every single day. Christian Encarnacion Strand was also very good yesterday. And how about the combo meal from Elly De La Cruz with the home run and the stolen base? He only struck out once yesterday, but also took a walk. What are we doing here, Cincinnati? I mean, let's go ahead and move De La Cruz up. Let's have him leading off. I can't, you know, when I'm making my bets and doing daily fantasy contests every single day, I don't want to deal with Elly De La Cruz batting sixth. Just like, let's fix it. Let's get him up to let's get him up to the leadoff spot here for the Phillies. I mean, what do you want? Like, it's just these games happen. It's a comedy of errors, not serious. They're 15-9. You're not always expecting to win the starts with your fourth and fifth starting pitchers anyways. And look, you're a Phillies fan. You got to be feeling pretty good about the way things are shaping up with the pitching injuries for the Atlanta Braves.
Exactly. And also, the Phillies pitching has been very good. That starting lineup has been amazing. Who's ever pitching on a night-to-night basis? And also, can't really blame Sanchez yesterday. If you're not going to field the baseball and give extra outs, eventually it's going to come back to haunt you, and it did yesterday. Also, keeping in mind, Bryce Harper's been out on paternity leave this week. I do believe he's back tomorrow. But take a look at the Philadelphia Phillies on the season itself. 15-9, which is usually an anomaly. And by the way, I think I saw a statistic where it's been like 50 or 60 years since the Philadelphia Phillies opened up with a 7-game win streak in the month of April. Which lets you know everything you need to know about the Phillies and their slow starts historically on the season. But they do sit at 15-9, run differential plus 11. They win the NL East a plus 370 price. The NL Pennant is at a 7-1 price, which currently has the Dodgers at a plus 165 price, followed by the Braves at plus 220, and then the Phillies there at a 7-1. We look at the Dodgers, who I don't think are playing great baseball just yet, but obviously over the length of the summer, they're going to do a lot of damage and win a lot of games. The Atlanta Braves, it almost doesn't seem like right now, Davis, they even care who's pitching. They're still winning baseball games, and you know the Atlanta Braves front office is going to springboard something. It's like, man, how did they get that guy for that price? And oh yeah, it works out like an absolute charm. So many times we see other franchises make moves at the deadline that don't help their teams out at all. That's not usually the case for the Braves. So in those pennant odds here, 7-1 price on the Phillies, 17-1 on the Cubs. Is it still between Dodgers, Braves, and Phillies, or anybody else that you might have on the mind there?
I don't really know if there's any other team in the National League that can match those teams. The Braves, the Phillies, and the Dodgers are far and away the best teams here. I mean, maybe if the Padres reverse course and go back into being buyers the way they were the last two seasons. I mean, they do have the top-end talent. I don't think any of the National League Central teams can even come close. Brewers, Cubs, Reds, Pirates, definitely not the St. Louis Cardinals. I mean, St. Louis Cardinals, man, just getting dummied by Tommy Henry and the Arizona Diamondbacks yesterday. The vibes here in St. Louis, Missouri about the baseball team, the vibes are very, very bad for the Cardinals. I think those three teams are pretty much in a league of their own, sort of the opposite of the American League, where I mean, I feel like there are like 8 teams probably still that are live to win the pennant in the American League, but it's very top heavy there in the National League. I don't, by the way, hate that bet for the Phillies to win the National League East, because the Braves are really on the razor's edge with starting pitching right now. Freed is you know, not at the top end of his game. Chris Sale in his age 35 season. You know, how many games are we getting 15? Are we getting 20 out of Chris Sale? I think that's on the higher end range of outcomes. You've got Charlie Morton in his age 40 season, Strider on the IL, and then just like a bunch of guys, you know, Aaron Geddy, Darius Vines. They have to make a trade for starting pitching, particularly if Sale gets hurt. I don't really know what their plan will be. And the Philly starting pitching, I feel just fine about.
By the way, you take a look at St. Louis, which we like to affectionately call it baseball heaven. Davis, are we close to booing at home games now for them? Did they boo yesterday in a 14-1 loss? What happened there?
There, I don't believe there were any boos, but it's just like this. The park was, I mean, it was a gross day in St. Louis yesterday. It was cold. It was rainy. I don't think people even knew if the game was going to happen. So, but the vibes were so low. I saw a couple of videos of basically just like 5,000 people there for the Cardinals. No one's paying attention. No one's cheering. So no boo birds yet. But they did this to themselves. You know, the Cardinals have done this to themselves. They, for their organizational philosophy, was just like they didn't teach their pitchers at the minor league level to aim for strikeouts. They were a pitch to contact organization. And as the math started to shift and as the game changed, the Cardinals have been a really slow organization to react to that. They also were not huge spenders in free agency. They've given up on all these amazing young outfield prospects too early. You know, I mean, the list of outfield prospects who've been traded by the Cardinals and had major moments for other organizations, it's like too long to list, obviously headlined by Randy Arozarena. But it's bad. And you know, it's such a baseball city that, like, the gate receipts and everything are going to be fine. I don't think this is an Oakland A's situation, but they got to do something because the current 40-man roster is not good enough.
Exactly. Got to get back to the days of Ozzie and Willie McGee and Jack Clark, Whitey Herzog as the manager here. My goodness. Baseball heaven. Doesn't look like it's so heavenly right now. By the way, shout out Nolan Arenado. It's like, you know, man, I'm tired of losing for the Colorado Rockies. Shows up in St. Louis and a lot more of the same certainly happening to him. Quick score. We'll go over here before we hit the break. The Pirates 2-1 here over the Milwaukee Brewers. Raise the Jolly Roger. And by the way, the Philadelphia Phillies, a cast-off here. Bailey Falter improves to 2-1 on the season. 7 innings pitched, 3 hits, 1 earned run, 8 strikeouts, and has an ERA of 3.33. Whether it's the Phillies staff currently now or the Phillies staff across baseball doing some damage out here. By the way, the Brewers were 10-3 on the road before dropping that game. They now sit at 10-4 on the road, 14-8 on the season, and the Buccos now above 500 at 13-11. Much more Major League Baseball talk here in hour number one. Keep the dial right here. SiriusXM Channel 159. The Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Final segment of hour number one here, an action-packed hour number one, hitting the baseball diamond here at Sunny Right Side and Davis Maddock. And my goodness, here, let's start in Chicago. 7-2 win, the Chicago Cubs over the Houston Astros. The Cubs improved to 14-9. The Houston Astros, Davis, 7-17 on the season now. JP France gets the start, 5 innings pitched, 5 earned runs, 6 Ks, 4 walks. They were down 5 runs before the Houston Astros even got up to the plate in the second inning. This game was over early. What is the deal with the Houston Astros?
Look, shout out the Chicago White Sox and the Colorado Rockies for keeping the Astros from having the worst record in baseball. I mean, what is happening? JP France, brutal. Hunter Brown, brutal. Spencer Arrighetti, brutal. Josh Hader has been bad as a closer. Brian Abreu has been bad out of the bullpen. Brandon Bielak, Ryan Presley, Sean Dubin, all these guys have been brutal out of the bullpen. And you might think, oh, it's the Astros, so they got to be hitting, right? I mean, they basically have the worst hitter in Major League Baseball in their first base / DH slot every single night. Jose Abreu, -35 OPS plus, 132 OBP. On the season, he's got 4 hits. He's got no home runs. How many RBIs? One RBI for one Mr. Jose Abreu. They're paying him good money. You know, they're paying him Jose Abreu money. Now, Abreu did start the season this bad last year and then did find a way to turn it around and kind of get close to something like his averages. I think you got to just say, Jose, thank you for your services. We are DFAing you. We'll pay you your money. If the, you know, the Oakland Athletics want to claim you, sure, that's fine. You know, whatever. But they just got to get him out of there. They have to do something else. If that means they got to play John Singleton, whatever. If that means they got to call someone up. If that means they have to trade. I mean, Daniel Vogelbach would be better than Jose Abreu right now. Like, there's just no reason for him to be playing. Bregman has been brutal by his standard, 66 OPS plus. The weird thing is most of their other guys have been okay. Diaz has been good. Pena has been good. Altuve's been good. Myers, Tucker, yeah. Yordan Alvarez, 5 home runs already for Yordan. Like, most of them have been good. It's just the lows on their roster are so low. It's like they've got 6 all-stars, and then the rest of the roster just stinks, and it's hard to win baseball games that way.
Yeah, Diaz is the catcher. Certainly a major upgrade over Maldonado, who, by the way, if you're looking at Maldonado's statistics on the Chicago White Sox, just as bad as they've ever been here. So you figure they were upgrading by just moving on from him. Not the case here, because de facto, Abreu has now been worse than what Maldonado even was in that lineup last year. Crazy times. But if we're looking at, let's just say, the pennant race, there's no panic here at the FanDuel Sportsbook. You know, the Yankees at a plus 310 price. You know who's in second place to win the pennant still? It's those Astros at a 5-1 price, even though they are playing horrendous baseball. Let me ask you this quick question on the Astros. When do you start to pull the plug on them, though? Let's just say, like, I understand we're only in the month of April. You've got May, June, July, August, September, and the first parts of October here. When do you pull the plug and say, you know what, I just don't think it's going to happen for the Astros this year?
It's definitely not yet. I'm not there yet. I mean, let me get to, it's 87 degrees every single day here in the Midwest for me to start worrying. They'll be getting, Justin Verlander back. You know, he'll be a part of the rotation. He'll be starting every 5 days. That definitely will help. Let them DFA Jose Abreu, you know, just bench him, right? They don't have to DFA him, but just bench him and let Singleton play every single day. And let me get like a 5-game hot streak from Alex Bregman. Give me 45 days from now, right? Then if they are still below 500, if they don't go on a 5-game winning streak at any point, if they're still trailing the Angels in the standings, then I'll say, you know what, it's just not happening for the Houston Astros this year.
By the way, should we say the class or the class A of the American League? Could be the Cleveland Guardians, 17-6 now, 7-3 at home after a 4-1 victory over the Boston Red Sox, which drops the Sox to 13-11. They're getting pitching. They're getting hitting. The Guardians. How about that? Progressive Field lighting up now.
Yeah, I mean, look, I am actively rooting against the Cleveland Guardians every single game. I'm kind of perturbed by the fact that they keep winning these games because I just want to go to a freaking playoff game at Kauffman Stadium again. They have not had a playoff game in Kauffman since I was in college, Donnie. I'm 31 years old. I have a mustache, you know, and I have not seen a Royals playoff game since I was in college. So enough already from, you know, the freaking Cleveland Guardians. Just cut it out.
Look, Cleveland might be playing good baseball now. Maybe they hang on here and the Kansas City Royals can't get in. So, hey, what do the Kansas City Royals do? Bobby Witt could probably fetch a pretty good number on the open market if you want to be that minor league baseball system for the rest of Major League Baseball. I'm just saying, Witt in a Phillies uniform, it could work out. Hour number 2 coming up right now. Don't go anywhere. Keep the dial right here. Here's XM Channel 159.